Good morning. The August 31st,
thank you, everyone.
2020. Thank you. The August 31st, 2021 Administration Committee meeting will now begin. For the record, this is a virtual meeting and all board members and participants are by telephone. I will now take roll call. Board Member Morocco?
Here.
Thank you. Board Member Adams?
Here.
Thank you. Board Member Gordon?
Here.
Thank you. And for the record, Board Member Ajmani is absent at today's meeting. Operator, we would like to open the floor for public comment. Can you please provide instructions for entering the queue to make a public comment?
Certainly. Ladies and gentlemen, the floor is now open for public comments. If you would like to make a public comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad to enter the queue. You will hear a brief tone to indicate you have successfully entered the queue. Priority access will be given to any participant who has pre-registered, and these comments will be taken in turn. We will then take public comments from remaining participants on a first-come, first-served basis. Each person will have 2 minutes for their public comment. A warning will be provided when 15 seconds remain. Once again, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad now to enter the queue to make a public comment. And there are 2 public comments in queue. The first public comment is coming from Joseph Clift. Joseph, your line is live and your time will now begin.
Good morning. My name is Joe Clift. I want to talk today about this committee's responsibilities regarding budgets. By law, you are required to be consulted. Hello?
Written on it.
I'm getting some background noise.
Please mute your phone if you are not speaking. Thank you.
May I start over?
Yes, please.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Joe Clift. I want to talk today about this committee's responsibility on budgets. By law, the New Jersey Transit Reform legislation, you're supposed to be consulted on any major investment. Budgets are obviously of that type. And I want to take you to page 6 of today's agenda. It's slide 2 of the Period 1 financial report. I sent in belatedly a single page. I don't know if you have it. But if you look at this page on there, is the 12-month rolling farebox revenue chart. And what you see is a little tiny dotted line that says pre-COVID, an actual line, and nothing else. If you would go back to the 11th month of fiscal 21 presented at the June or July board meeting, I can't remember which, the June meeting, what you'll see in there is a budget line. And the actual is tracking below the budget line. Now, last March, this board passed an outlook set of budget proposals that provided a fiscal 22 outlook. So my simple question is, why are you, this committee, not being provided with budget performance at least through last month? You don't have a budget for July or through June. You don't have a budget starting in July. But why aren't they giving you the information on their analysis of what the budget forecast, the proposed change that they submitted in March and you approved? They should be telling you how performance, actual revenue performance, is compared to their forecast. Because the issue you're facing is, will the passenger revenue forecast be below
15 seconds remaining
what was previously said? And the legislature has only given you $100 million for fiscal 22. I believe you will need more, but you don't have the information to figure that out. Thank you very much and have a good day.
Thank you. And there is one more public comment in queue. Ladies and gentlemen, if there were anyone else wanted to join the queue for public comment, please press star 1 on your phone at this time. The next public comment is coming from Ryan Falmet. Ryan, your line is live and your time will now begin.
Hello, good evening, board members and staff. This is Ryan Falmet. I'm a rail rider from Summit into New York City. I just want to follow up on my comments that I made at the board meeting this past week in relation to specifically, I have plenty of other concerns, but I think one very paramount issue that I'm seeing is with respect to internal complaints, litigation, the cost of litigation, the processes around the EEO office and HR. I can see from these slides that there is an abundance of hiring going on in these departments, such as HR. So, and I can also see, and I'm sure somebody will point out, that the cases have been closed between, let's say, last year and this year. I'd like to know what cases closed means. Is that someone was reinstated into NJ Transit? Were they paid off via settlements? Because there's been an increase of what appears to be some kind of extreme examples of sexual harassment. For example, six women who filed lawsuits against a bus driver. So that's how does that make its way? Like, right? So that's a public report, a public lawsuit. So why aren't we talking about incidents like that? And what are we doing to make the environment more more friendly, transparent? And so these types of culture things, from my perspective, is what bogs down progress in actual ridership. So I would like to see an investigation, and I know you can't talk about specific matters, but I'd like to hear more dialogue about what you're doing to actually put these issues to bed, and more transparency so the public knows. They're taxpayers and we're riders, and we deserve to know what's going on. And I believe the employees also deserve answers to this and need to be talked about in the public, as I've talked about with Senator Weinberg herself, who agrees with me. So instead of just, we hear you, we take it serious, I'd like to hear more. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you. And there were no other public comments in queue at this time.
Thank you, and thank you, public speakers. Board Member Morocco, do you have any comments?
No, Joyce, thank you.
Thank you. Board Member Adams, do you have any comments?
Yes, I do, Joyce. And this is, I first of all, I want to thank the thank Joe Cliff and Ryan Feldman. I can say the name specifically because there were just two of them speaking. For taking the time out of your day to give you our concerns and comments. And Ryan, yes, I'm going to repeat, we do take the comments seriously. But in the case that you had brought up on the advice of legal counsel, we cannot speak about that case. But I can assure you that in the not-too-distant future, the team at New Jersey Transit will be letting the public know what we're doing in order to prevent cases like this from happening in the future. As far as Joe Cliff's comments, I would like the transit team to speak about, if they can't do it now, how our actual is compared to a forecasted budget. I think Mr. Cliff brought up a good point that I don't know if the information is missing there or if it's just not on a different slide, but I would like that explained to this board. Those are my only comments, and again, I want to thank Joseph and Ryan for their comments. Thank you, Joyce.
Thank you. Board Member Gordon, do you have any comments?
Just very briefly, thanks to Ryan and Joe Cliff for your comments. As James noted, we really can't talk in any detail about these sexual harassment complaints that have been made, but, you know, I just want to assure the questioners and the public that this board is very focused on making whatever improvements are necessary in business processes in the HR function and elsewhere so that these problems do not happen again. That's our responsibility as a board. And regarding Joe's comment about budget versus actual revenue, we have been in our budget discussions talking about the forecasts that were made based on assumptions of ridership returning. We have to continue looking at that and understand whether there are adjustments that are going to be necessary. And I can assure you we're focused on that as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Next is the financial update, Jeff Bernstein.
Thank you and good morning. I'm pleased to present our first financial report for fiscal 22. Through the first month of fiscal two, which ended July 31st, 2021, New Jersey Transit's net loss from operations was $3.6 million, plus a $32 million CARISA Act drawdown, plus a $300,000 loss related to the timing of reimbursable project revenue, for a net gain for the month of $28.1 million. This compares to last year, where we reported a $110.5 million loss from operations, a $50 million CARES Act reimbursement, and a $1 million loss due to the timing of reimbursable project revenue for a net loss of $61.5 million. Passenger revenue is $24.5 million, or 150% above last July's passenger revenue. This reflects, of course, the overall continued recovery from the deaths of the pandemic. In comparison to the prior month of June 2021, revenue from rail, bus, and light rail operations has increased 12.5%, 7.3%, and 6.9% respectively, reflecting an overall passenger revenue increase of $3.6 million, or about 10%. State operating assistance and other grants have increased significantly over last year. This is due to the timing of receipts. Expenses remain roughly in correspondence to last year's actuals. Of note, labor and fringe expenses have increased slightly by 3.6%, and access link costs have risen by $2.1 million. The access link cost increase, however, reflects additional service demand as we continue our rush recovery from last year's lows. In July, as mentioned, we drew $32 million of CARISA funds. On page two is a more detailed view of actual farebox revenues. The dotted line at the top of each graph is a pre-COVID baseline, while the solid lines represent the 12-month rolling actual revenue since August of 2020. Revenue by all modes began to increase starting in February 2021 as the region emerged from last winter's COVID wave and the vaccination efforts began to take effect. In July, corporate-wide farebox revenues were approximately 48% of the pre-COVID baseline, which is up from 42% in June of 2021. The third slide illustrates the comparison of farebox recovery ratios across two separate periods. The top line on each chart depicts the farebox recovery ratio during the pre-COVID timeframe of August 2018 through July of 2019. The bottom line shows the dramatic decrease in the recovery ratios during the most recent 12-month period. As you can see from the charts, we've seen a 7% increase overall from last month, and bus and rail reporting increases of 11% and 8% respectively over prior month. Slide four illustrates bus revenue and ridership continued progress throughout the month of June, specifically with trends in our bus submarkets. Bus revenue and ridership intrastate has returned to over 60% of pre-COVID levels. However, specifically our northern interstate market to and from New York City continues to remain substantially lower than prior year. Or actually pre-COVID. Not mentioned on this chart are rail monthly ticket sales for the month of July 2021, which were at 14% of July 2019 pre-COVID levels, with bus monthly ticket sales at 37% of July 2019 levels. This is a continuance of the trend that we've been reporting in recent months. Next page five, illustrates the status of our COVID-19 federal relief grants.
Hello.
We are currently utilizing three different sources of federal relief funds that have been made available to New Jersey Transit. The first source of funds was $1,423.5 million made available through the CARES Act. Drawdowns began in May of 2020, and as of today, the entire amount has been drawn down. The Coronavirus Response and Relief Supplemental Appropriations Act, or CARISA, was the next tranche of funds made available to New Jersey Transit. $1.47 billion was made available to New Jersey in this act. As of today, only $68 million has been awarded, and that amount has been fully drawn down. We are still awaiting the results of the ongoing negotiations with the state of New York regarding the remaining amount. The American Rescue Plan Act of 2021, or ARPA, is the final tranche of funds made available to us. New Jersey Transit has been awarded $255.8 million of the $2.36 billion made available to New Jersey through this act. $40 million of this amount has already been drawn down. Similarly, with CARISA, we are still awaiting the results of the ongoing negotiations with the state of New York regarding the remaining amount. Generally speaking, eligible expenses for these drawdowns to date would include labor and fringe benefits, purchase transportation costs, professional services, electric propulsion power, and fuel for revenue vehicles. Of these expenses, the majority, or almost 80% of the funds, have been used to support labor and fringe. The next and final slide, our operating cash balance at July 31st, 2021 was $106.2 million, a $48.8 million decrease from June 2021. On July 31st, 2021, we had no outstanding balance on a credit facility, and our long-term debt balance was $1.2 million. Thank you, and that concludes my report.
Thank you. Board Member Morocco, do you have any questions or comments?
Just one. Recognizing you don't have a crystal ball, can you give us any details on the progress with the negotiations with the state of New York regarding the divvying up of the ARPA funds?
Board Member Morocco, it's Kevin. We are still at the high-level negotiations working with New York. Obviously, the changeover in the administration there is, the governor's office is dealing with the new colleagues over in New York. But we are working against the clock before they shut the window down for the reconciliation period. So we hope in the next week or so to have resolution. If not, that'll likely delay it when the FTA shuts down that window. So even if we come to resolution at that point, it'll be several months till we could actually get the funds for FTA, because they shut down for September, October as they finish their own fiscal year and do the reconciliation on the grants and report to Congress until they reopen that window. So there's a lot of focus on trying. I know from the three states, including Connecticut. Connecticut has a lot to invested in this as well. So hopefully we'll have news, in the next week or so. If not, even if we come to a resolution, then it will be from a cash flow basis. Bill could speak to that, but it would likely be several months where we would not be able to draw down cash, even if there is resolution.
Got it. Well, I appreciate the update. Thanks.
Thank you. Board Member Adams, do you have any questions or comments?
Yes, Joyce. Thank you. Jeff, I know you heard my comment earlier to Joe Cliff about his comment during the public comment session about the actual performance versus forecasted. I believe, and I could be wrong, Joe is referring to, I think, a prior month's report, maybe in June or whatever. It actually listed what the budgeted amount was, and it had the actual, and then it had the pre-COVID. So there was kind of like three different lines, and this recent report only has pre-COVID and actual. Is there a way for you to speak to the actual versus forecasted, or is there a reason why the forecasted budget line was removed from this report?
So, Board Member Adams, Bill Vaccara. So you may, as you recall, we didn't adopt the fiscal year 22 budget that we reviewed last March because of the splits, disagreement, and lack of resolution with New York. What we adopted in July was the authorization to continue spending essentially in line with fiscal 21. So for purposes of this comparison, we compared to fiscal year 21. Now, that said, that budget for fiscal 22 was ready to go, but for the resolution of the splits. So going back to what did we forecast, which I think is really the kind of the fundamental question. We had forecasted for fiscal year 22 Farebox revenue to come in at about $590 million for the full year. Roughly speaking, that would be 60% of pre-COVID Farebox. So where are we now through July? July came in right in line with our forecast, slightly ahead. The arc to get to 60% started off at about slightly less than 50%, which is where we are, reached 60% by the end of the calendar year, and about 75% by the end of the fiscal year. So if you track that arc, which is what we talked about in those charts you're referring to, overall would have gotten you to 60%, starting off at just below 50, reaching 60 by mid-year. So where are we now? As I said, we're slightly below 50, which is on track with the forecast. I can tell you the month of August looks like it will be a slight improvement to July in revenue, not by much, but it will still be in line with what the Farebox forecast was back in March. The only thing I would add to that is obviously the Delta variant is a new variable that presents a risk to the forecast. We monitor very, very closely where we are with Farebox, and it's certainly an item that, you know, we're well aware of and monitoring.
Okay. So Bill, thank you. And then that's an excellent explanation, because I know there's always a good reason for a change. I would have preferred that that the forecast would have been included with a caveat or explanation, because it would just highlight the excellent job that you and your team have done, and your forecast seems to be accurate. So, I mean, there's nothing for you to do now, but now that you explained it, it makes perfect sense. I hope that answers Joe Cliff's question. It definitely answers my question of why it was left out, because the budget that it contained had not been adopted. So I understand that. Thank you, Bill, and thank you, Jeff. No other questions, Joyce.
And Board Member Adams, they were happy to add that. We have the information, so we could certainly add that. Hopefully we'll be able to adopt the budget the next time we get together, but in the meantime, we have the forecast, can certainly add that information.
No, and the reason why you add is it just shows that, you know we did a good job in actually, you know, predicting what would come to be. And you're right, nobody could have predicted we'd be where we are with the Delta variant. That's why it's called a forecast. So thank you.
Thank you. Board Member Gordon, do you have any questions or comments?
No further questions or comments. Thanks.
Thank you. Next is the Human Resources Update, Valerie Green.
Hi, good morning. This is Senior Vice President Kwan, and I just wanted to share with the committee that the last time that you heard from Human Resources, it was from Judy Mastilla, who is then our Acting Chief of HR. And now our acting policy encourages that we rotate the acting position. So this morning, you're going to hear from Valerie Green, who is our acting chief of HR, and she's been doing a terrific job with the transition and with moving all of our HR priorities along. So, and with that, I'll hand it over to Valerie. Val?
Good morning, everyone. Before we dive into the human resources dashboard for the months of June and July, I want to highlight a few of our department's achievements over the course of the past several months. Part of our goal at New Jersey Transit is to initiate engagement among our field operational staff. So in June, employee engagement led a series of employee-focused events that included 7 different New Jersey Transit facilities to educate employees about the various benefits available to them and generated newfound connections. To name a few of those locations, we visited Newton Avenue in Camden, GOB, Hamilton Garage, Washington Township, Morrisville Yard, the MMC, and Ferry Street. I'd like to thank Melanie Ashley, the Director of Employee Engagement, Sherry Reed West, the Principal Employee Engagement Specialist, Chris Dubon, the Employee Engagement Specialist, and Adriana Matos, Employee Engagement Assistant, for facilitating these events and nurturing the ongoing relationship with our employees. In July, New Jersey Transit thanked the 108 employee volunteers who offered their time and energy to helping New Jersey Transit staff members receive COVID vaccines through our VaxSafe campaign. Completely run by the volunteer team, we vaccinated 1,600 employees at New Jersey Transit. Our volunteer appreciation event was held outside at Ferry Street to allow for social distancing. Provided special recognition to Eleanor Long, Manager of Medical Services Administration, our Vaccine Task Force members, Judith Mastilla, Deputy Chief of HR, Kenneth Rotter, Deputy General Manager for Bus Labor Relations, Steve Drazen, Deputy General Manager for Labor Relations Rail, Jeff McNella, Director Organizational Services, Ken Miller, Director Customer Experience and Communications, Police Officer Frank Irado, and Anna Krupionicki, Manager Environmental Permitting Programs, who all led within our COVID-19 incident command structure, with tireless dedication to organizing this event ensured the campaign's success. Now let's look to the Human Resources Dashboard for the months of June and July of 2021. For overall headcount in June, there were a total of 12,269, and July there were the total of 12,404. As far as the number of positions requisitioned to fill in June, they were 586 FTEs in total, where I now will explain the breakdown by department. In corporate, for agreement positions, there were 45 FTEs, all for police. Corporate non-agreement, there were 135, with key highlights on capital programs with 28, Office of System Safety with 16, IT with 25, and HR with 14. Bus agreement, there were 243, with key highlights on operators holding 103, service persons with 30, mechanics A with 14, and 8 for cleaners. For bus non-agreement, there were 54 FTEs, including 18 for foreman 2, 10 for regional supervisors, and 26 in various other positions. For rail agreement, there were 72, with key highlights of 17 being assistant maintainers, 9 for mechanics B, 8 for communications trainee, 7 for pipe fitter, and 33 for other various positions. For rail non-agreement, there were 34 FTEs, with 7 from engineering and 27 from various other roles. Light rail had 3 non-agreement superintendents. For employee actions, a few highlights per category were: for new employees, corporate hired 10, where 2 of which are foreman 2 and 8 in various other positions. Bus hired 23 with 10 operators, 8 servicemen, 3 cleaners, and 2 seasonal ticket sellers. Rail hired 17 with 5 car appearance maintainers, also known as CAMs, 5 trackmen, and 7 in various other positions. For promotions, corporate had 5, rail had 11, in which 11 LETP were promoted to 4 locomotive engineers, 2 maintenance of equipment foremen, and 5 in various other positions. There were no promotions in June for bus. For job reclassification, corporate had 7 in various positions, and bus had 10 in various other roles. For retirement, corporate had 2, bus had 16, where 10 were operators and 6 were in various other positions. Rail had 7 and light rail held 2. Other separations included resignations and or dismissals, where that corporate had 2 resignations, bus had 25, where 18 were for operators, 6 were resignations for personal reasons, and 1 was a result of the discipline. Rail had 14, where 8 were from LETP, and 6 were for other various reasons. In terms of disciplinary actions, in June, bus suspensions were 38 in bus agreement and 2 in non-agreement. Rail had 28 suspensions in rail agreement and 2 for non-agreement. And as far as discharges, there were 0 in agreement, 2 for non-agreement bus. And for discharges in rail, there were 0. In July, there were a total of 640 FTEs, where the departmental breakdown is as follows. For corporate agreement, there were 37 FTEs for police. In corporate non-agreement, there were 168, in which key highlights are 36 for capital programs, 23 for the Office of System Safety, 25 in IT, and 14 in HR. For bus agreement, there were 295 FTEs, in which operators held 221 and cleaners held 11. For bus non-agreement, there were 49, where 17 were for foreman 2s, 5 were for auxiliary instructors, and the additional 55 were for other various positions. For rail agreement, there were 36 FTEs, where 17 were for assistant maintainers, 8 for communications trainee, and 6 for pipe fitter, and 33 for other various roles. There were 25 for rail non-agreement, in which engineering held 7, and 18 were for other various positions. Light rail had 3 non-agreement superintendents. For employee actions, a few highlights are: for new employees, corporate hired 14, where 3 were foreman 2 and 11 were for other various positions. Corporate hired 50, in which 43 were operators, 5 were bus cleaners, and 2 were servicemen. Rail hired 59, in which 24 were assistant conductors, 11 were electricians, 11 additional were machinists, and 7 were car and parish maintainers and or CAMs, and 6 were for other various positions. For job reclassifications, there were 21 overall among all business units for various roles. For retirements, corporate had 7, in which 4 were in police and 3 were in various other departments. Bus had 24, in which 16 were operators, 3 were repairmen, and 5 were of various positions. Rail had 10 retirements, in which 1 was a locomotive engineer, 2 were conductors, and 7 additional were in various other positions. For our July promotions, corporate had 29, in which 12 promotions were trainees that promoted to police officers, 5 were sergeants, and 4 were lieutenants. Rail had 12, in which 5 were foremen, 3 were senior quality control specialists, and 4 were of other various positions. Other separations, including resignations and or discharges, 5 were in corporate for various reasons. Bus had 31, in which 24 were operators. Rail had 15, in which 4 were CAMs. An additional 4 were from the LETP, and 7 additional were various, with 1 resignation from light rail. For our suspensions and discharges for July, the bus department had 22 in bus agreement, and 0 in non-agreement. Rail for suspensions were 22 in agreement and 0 for non-agreement. In terms of discharges for bus, there were 3 in agreement, 1 in non-agreement. And in rail, there were 3 in agreement and 1 in non-agreement. I appreciate your attention throughout this committee meeting, and please know that I'm here to answer any questions you may have. This concludes my report.
Thank you. Board Member Morocco, do you have any questions or comments?
Briefly, I want to congratulate you on your continued efforts at employee outreach and engagement. I think that remains crucially important during these times, and particularly with respect to the focus on vaccination efforts. I think those can literally be the matter of life and death, so I great job on that. Just one general question, which is, I know at the last board meeting we approved the new collective bargaining agreement on the bus side that increases wages, and I was wondering whether you could speak briefly about your expectation about whether that will make recruitment into those positions easier in the not-so-distant future.
Thank you for the question. One of the concerns that we shared with the union during negotiations was our place in the priority list for wages in the industry. This moves us up on that list pretty significantly, which allows us to offer a better starting wage. We also have fewer step increases so that you get to top rate quicker. Our hiring bonus program will enhance that. So we believe the new wage structure, especially with the first year being the highest amount, will allow us to onboard people quicker and hopefully sustain that with retention so that we can keep ahead of attrition. So I definitely believe that's going to go a long way towards helping us attract and retain talent.
No, that's terrific. Thanks. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Board Member Adams, do you have any questions or comments?
Yes, I do, Joyce. And thank you, Valerie Green, for that report. And thank you, Board Member Morocco, because you answered my question about the bargaining agreement and the bus drivers, because I know we're having some challenges based on the industry and other people looking for CDLs to fill those positions. So thank you for that question. I do have a question that is kind of separate and apart, but it is an HR-related question. We just recently hired a general counsel, and I was curious to know how the salary of that position was determined, number one, and in the hiring pool, how many blacks, Hispanics, and women and other minorities were in that final consideration for that position? And I'm not sure who's best to answer that question.
Hi. Salaries were benchmarked for this particular position for the general counsel role. We also have other positions that we look to map the salary for this position, so it's within the market.
So what does benchmarking mean? You mean it compared to other general counsels and other authorities in New Jersey?
Yes.
Okay. How does it equate to other salaries within the agency?
Kevin just say that for the direct reports to me.
Yes, that's what I was referring to.
Under the senior most positions, there's a band that's within that that's similar, but it would equate to the position, say, of Mike Kilcoyne.
Okay, so I'm gonna make this up. So the band that reports to you, this salary is within that band of people who report to you?
That's correct.
Okay, okay. All right, and then my second question about the pool that we use to pick from?
I will get back to you on that information.
That's perfectly fine. Perfectly fine. And thank you for the report. My last thing, and I know I mention this at every single meeting, how are we doing, and I'm not singling out this department, but how are we doing with capital as far as hiring those people that are going to help us push along our capital plan? How are we doing with that?
So currently, there are 22 positions for non-portal requisitioned and 20 that are portal jobs that are requisitioned. Out of the 20 portal jobs, there are 5 offers that have been extended. And we have a team of 4 recruiters who are specifically assigned to CP to help with their recruiting efforts.
Okay. So do you think, as far as from your opinion, do you think the effort is going as you had planned it?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So just let the board know if there's anything that we can do to help fill these critical positions. And thank you for the report. I have no other questions, Joyce.
Thank you. Board Member Gordon, do you have any questions or comments?
Just a couple of questions, and my thanks to Valerie for the report. As I'm looking at the vacancy data, there are 475 vacancies in surface transportation. I think Bill Vaccara confirmed that in response to a question I raised in an earlier meeting. It's unclear to me, you know, how significant a number that is. I see a number of 4.9%. Does the 475 represent 4.9% of the total roster of surface transportation personnel? And if not, can someone tell me, maybe Bill or Michael can tell me how significant that 475 number is, because we've obviously in the rail side we've seen what kind of impact a number of vacancies in locomotive engineers can have on the performance of the system. Should we be worried about the 475 as a number that could greatly affect performance of our bus operations?
So the 475 is an overall number from surface transit, keeping in mind that there were 5,200 agreement personnel.
Okay.
At 475, just over 300 of them are bus operator requisitions. You're absolutely right. That is of concern to all of us, which is why we are focused so significantly on the recruiting of bus operators, because that has, you know, a direct day-to-day impact on our ability to serve people waiting on the street. So we have commenced the hiring of recruiters to improve the sourcing of bus operators. Our maintenance personnel, especially with the upcoming electrification, is another area of concern. We are working on enhancing the hiring environment for that position as well. So there, in surface transit overall, there are close to 6,000 employees when you include non-agreement and light rail and access link as well. So you can take that 475 in context to that overall number as it relates to its significance. The other part of the challenge isn't just the vacancies, it's the absenteeism, particularly during the pandemic, and a number of people who are out addressing, you know, other personal issues, personal sickness, or taking care of family members is another stressor that
further highlights. So where are you going to be sitting?
Folks.
Mrs. Brown. Okay, I'll come get you.
Okay, thank you for that. One other question. Regarding the administrative personnel, the non-agreement personnel, I see an upward trend in vacancies. And from what I've been told, there has not been a pay raise for non-agreement staff for some time. I don't know what the details are. can someone provide a little background on the state of the non-agreement personnel and the last time there was a pay raise for that group? And is that, in fact, a factor in the growing vacancies in that segment of the organization?
So as far as the salary increases, there have been no pay raises. However, for the uptick in the openings, they are in various stages of our recruitment life cycle.
Well, my concern is, from what I've been hearing, is that staff is, there's a reluctance of staff to move from the agreement side to the non-agreement, presumably into a more of a managerial role, because of a financial disincentive. And if that's the case, I think that's a policy issue the board and senior management should address.
So, Board Member Gordon, this is Mike Kilcoyne. I'll give you an example from the surface transit perspective. Because of the differences in access to the pension plan, for instance, agreement employees through contract maintain their participation in the transportation employee retirement plan, whereas that was phased out by prior administrations in 2006 for non-agreement employees. So that is, as an example, one circumstance where it creates difficulty recruiting people from the rank and file, because there are a number of these types of contractual issues that people prefer to keep rather than go into non-agreement. But that's not to say that we don't have a robust transfer to non-agreement for people interested in management. So as an example, it's not just the salary. It's a number of other things, not to mention the amount of time we spend managing the system. You know, people have, you know, very specific personal needs, their ability to pick their shift, for instance. Some people work at night for a reason, and that further benefits them. So it is a complex issue and not solely related to finances.
Okay. Thank you. No further questions. Thanks.
Thank you. Next is the Equal Employment Opportunity and Affirmative Action Update. Naheem Din.
Good morning. Starting with the first slide after the cover page, I'll begin with some highlights. During June and July, we continued to process new complaints and reduce the number of pending complaints. At the end of July, there were 38 pending complaints. Looking back 3 years, there were 68 pending complaints at the end of July last year and 118 pending complaints at the end of July 2019. And going back to July 28, there were 129 pending complaints. For training and outreach, we have launched our Zero Tolerance campaign. Our discrimination and harassment prevention policies clearly state that there is to be no tolerance for discrimination or harassment of any kind. A part of continuing with employee outreach and engagement, we are reaching out to our employees to affirm that we are committed to a work environment that is free from discrimination and harassment of any type, that we have a strong policy prohibiting this type of conduct, and that if they violate our policy, there are severe consequences. We're telling employees that there is to be no retaliation for complaining about discrimination or harassment. We want our employees to reach out to us even if they themselves are not subject to discrimination or harassment, but if they know someone someone else who might be. So we're telling our employees that we have an internal complaint process. We want our employees to know that we're here to listen and will respond to their concerns. We have a dedicated hotline as well as an email address for employees to contact us. So our goal is to create best possible work environment and prevent harassment discrimination, which is essential for achieving that goal. So as part of our Zero Tolerance campaign, we're reaching out to employees by increasing visits to our facilities. We're reaching out to employees through an agency-wide virtual meeting that will be held. We're placing a zero-tolerance message on computer and cell phone lock screens, which has actually been done. We are also reaching out to employees through NJTV, through posters, which will be displayed at our facilities, and through our company newsletter, Community Notes. One of our strategic goals is to build an accountable, innovative, and inclusive organization. To advance this goal, starting in the fall, we will provide online training on a number of topics, including prevention of workplace discrimination harassment, avoidance of retaliation, essentials of employment law for managers, diversity, inclusion, sensitivity, workplace violence prevention, unconscious bias, and creating a positive work environment. Moving to the next slide. So in addition to providing training to our employees, we continue to provide training to our own staff on EEO laws and best practices. In the past 3 years, our staff has received training from the U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. They have also received certification and complaint investigation from Cornell University School of Industrial and Labor Relations, which is a leader in this field. Our staff also continues to receive annual refresher training. In addition, staff have received training in workplace safety and harassment prevention from the Federal Transit Administration, which is provided through the National Transit Institute. Our staff also receives annual refresher from the EEOC, as well as from Cornell School of Industrial and Labor Relations. This is for the staff to stay in contact with current with new developments and changes in the law. So this is an ongoing process. Next slide. As this slide shows, the number of new complaints started a downward trend that started after 2018. I'm starting with this year, 2018, because this is the year for which we have the most complete data. We're also reducing the average time it takes to process a complaint. And as you can see, that is indicated by the blue line that is going diagonally across the page. So the number of filed and pending closed complaints per year, that is as of July 31st, 2021. So, for instance, at the end of July, we closed all of the cases in 2018, and as some of the remain open from 2019 through 2021. Moving to the next slide. This slide shows the status of cases which were filed in previous years. By the end of July, all cases that were filed in 2018 had been closed. I'm sorry. Right page. Yeah. I beg your pardon. So this slide shows the cases which were filed and which were closed by month from January through July. So for instance, for the current reporting period, which is June and July, 18 investigations were opened and 16 were closed. The July 2020 figure is included here for comparison purposes only. Moving to the next slide, which is slide 6. This slide shows the number of open cases from prior years, and as you can see, the trend is downward, and some of the information was presented earlier. So, for instance, it shows that the 2019 cases, there are only a few cases remaining open. So at the end of July, there were 3 cases which remained open from 2019. However, we have closed 1 case in the meantime, so now there are only 2 cases which are open from July 2019, and 10 remain open from 2020. The remaining cases are from 2021. Moving to the next slide, the pie chart on the left shows the most frequently alleged basis for discrimination. This included allegations of discrimination based on race, 28%, sex, 22%, retaliation, 15%, age, 9%, color, 7%, and disability, 6%. The pie chart on the right shows the most frequently cited basis for discrimination alleged in complaints by action. 71% of the complaints allege non-sexual harassment, while 11% allege hiring and assignment. Of the complaints that allege non-sexual harassment, most allege harassment based on race, followed by retaliation. And moving to the next slide, this slide shows the complaints which were opened and closed in June and July 2021. In June, 9 complaints were opened and 11 were closed. In July, 9 complaints were opened and 5 were closed. And this concludes my report. Thank you.
Thank you. Board Member Morocco, do you have any questions or comments?
Just a few. First, thank you for the report. I think we can all agree that, you know, prevention and remediation of harassment and discrimination is so critically important. I would trust that you would let this committee and the board know if there is anything that we can do to assist you in completing that mission. I hope you won't hesitate to let us know if there's anything that needs to be done. The question I have relates to the, I think it was on page 3, it was the slide that shows the average processing time of complaints, and the trend line certainly seems to be going in the right direction in terms of the number of days from opening the case to closing it. I did note, however, the footnote there that the 2021 number does not include certain cases that haven't been resolved. And I was hoping maybe you could explain a little bit what that means and whether there's a way in kind of future charts if you could account for that.
Yes, thank you for that question. Yes, the 41 cases for 2021, that's as of July. So from between June and July, of the cases that we closed, it took 41 days to close. But as you can see, there are cases remaining open from previous years. So when we close them, we would be able to show what the average time was. So I guess at the end of the year, 2021, we will have an accurate number of what was the average time it took for us to close for the year 2021.
Okay, so you're saying only closed cases are counted. Ones that are still pending, you just kind of discard or ignore for purposes of getting this number. Is that right?
Yeah, so this number shows, for instance, in each year, how long on average it took for us to close a case. So, you know, for average, some are for more, some are less, but on average, that is the time it took in each year to close all the cases which were closed in that particular year.
Understood. Yep, I got it. Thank you.
Thank you. Board Member Adams, do you have any questions or comments?
Yes, I do, Joyce. First is to thank you, Naeem, for the report, and I'm glad to see that the trend is moving in the right direction, number one, and that you continually to provide training and education and instruction to the team and also to your direct team. I do want you to answer the question that Ryan Felmet asked, and I think his question was, what does it mean that a case gets closed? Or either just give a couple of general examples of what you mean by a case is closed.
Certainly. So a case comes in, we open an investigation, we look at the allegations, we review documentation, we speak with the respondent, the complainant, any witnesses, any other person who has knowledge, then we make a determination. Once a determination is made, we issue a determination letter to the complainant and the respondent, and if appropriate, we will make recommendations to the appropriate department or to HR or to any other department if we feel that any type of action is warranted. And at that stage, the case is deemed closed. We would close our case file.
Okay. So closed means that your department or your division, EEOC, has made a determination that, and these are my words, not yours, that the case is either category 1, 2, or 3, or whatever the case may be.
Yes, sir. It means that the investigation has been completed.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. My last comment is kind of a request. I see that you're going to be providing, coming in the fall, some training, online training on a variety of topics. Do you think, obviously subject to Kevin and the board chair's approval, that the board members would have the opportunity to participate in those trainings also?
Yes, sir, absolutely. I think that would be a great idea.
Okay. All right. I guess go through Joyce and just, you know, give us an invite in subject to our availability, because I would personally like to know, you know what the team is being instructed on and the good job that your department is doing. So, again, thank you, Joyce. That's my only questions and comments.
Okay. Thank you. Board Member Gordon, do you have any questions or comments?
Yes, Joyce. Thank you. And my thanks to Naeem for his report. I'd like to turn to a different subject, and that is complaints related to inequities in compensation. All of my colleagues on the board, I'm sure, hear chatter from the organization. I've heard that there has been an increase in the number of complaints filed under the Equal Pay Act relating to inequities in compensation, and what I've heard is that these complaints have languished. I'm wondering whether we could get a report on the recent trends in any complaints filed related to compensation, and I'd of course be interested in any comments the staff would like to make at this point on that.
Certainly, Board Member Gordon, we can take your request under advisement and get back to you through the board office.
That'd be great. Maybe for our next month's report, or next month's meeting, if not before.
I understand. Thank you. Yes.
Thank you. That was my only question or comment.
Oh, thank you. Board members, staff, and members of the public, that concludes the agenda for the Administration Committee meeting. Thank you for your participation. You may disconnect your line.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you all.
Thank you.